Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in communications with classes in online journalism, digital video production, interviewing, and crisis communications. strose.edu/grad.
And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The professor, the publisher, and the editor are with you for the Media Project. Professor is Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Here he be. Professor Emeritus, that is, and columnist, commentator, and all that kind of stuff. Sir,
sure to you.
We're trying to make sure that he's here, actually.
But barely.
In person. Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Hello, welcome to be back.
Welcome
Does that
to
make
be
any
back.
Sense?
Yes, we're welcome, Ira.
Welcome to me, welcome to me. Hooray.
Welcome to be back, I like it.
And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. We're working on English as a second language around here for some of us.
Hey, Rexy, I noticed that you have a really, and this is media related, I want you to know.
Media
A really crisp white shirt on, which you do every time you come in here.
Yes.
And it takes some starch, doesn't it? You put some starch in it?
I think there's some starch in this shirt.
Yeah, probably.
Just to, you know, give me a backbone, you know, and editors need to have a backbone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I say that is that there aren't really that many people. I wear a black shirt a la Johnny Cash with a tie every day.
Just like Johnny Cash.
Yeah,
that's what
right. I am just like Johnny Cash.
Right.
I do. I do. I'm in a ring of fire. And you, sir, you know, you're running a newspaper. You've been doing fabulous work on the prison break in Clinton. You've gotten something like 2 million hits on your web every day.
2 million a day sometimes.
That's incredible.
It's pretty great. Actually, the cool thing is, and this is an interesting lesson that we've learned. Sorry to interrupt, but you are interrupting.
The only thing I wanted to say is, you know, the editors wear, it's like Perry Whitey wore a white shirt and a tie.
That's true.
You know, and so, you know, do you ever worry that
Don't call me chief.
Well, you know, when you're not in business every day, as is currently my situation, when you see someone with a white shirt, it actually, I do a double take because I'm not used to seeing white shirts.
Anymore. Well, what do you know?
Well, fewer and fewer.
So one of the interesting things about the prison break in New York State is the level at which there has been, let's say, collaboration among the media, one person playing off another story. I mean, a lot of the original reporting, a lot of the original breaks were ours, which we posted on TimesUnion.com as it happened. And frequently, our investigations editor, Brendan Lyon, who was doing a lot of the reporting from the Albany area, was on TV via Skype. Both Fox and CNN put him on the air from the newsroom just using Skype on his computer.
How does that look?
It looks pretty good, actually. We just throw a little floodlight on him. The light is the key thing. And they run him in a corner of the screen so that you don't have to have the big... It may not look so great on giant screens. I don't know.
You know, Rexy, I've been very interested in something. Perhaps it's my memory, and perhaps it is something new. But I've been noticing that print articles quite frequently refer to other print articles in either competing or other newspapers. Is that new? In other words, in the old days, I always had the sense you don't give any, it's almost as if you're giving away your firstborn to mention that somebody else did something. But I'm noticing all the time now that one newspaper, now there are potentially a couple of reasons, right, for that?
Let's just see if the phenomenon, you think it's new?
I think it's not new as in within the last couple of months, but I do think it's new over the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's right.
And I do think it's partially or maybe largely motivated by the internet, where we have been more inclined to link to other sites or give credit to other sites. And I think finally, and long overdue in my view, it's showing up more in the print product as
well.
And
what does it cost you? Nothing.
Well, it costs you, theoretically, it costs you, if Rex does a story in the Albany Times-Union and he has to credit the Schenectady Gazette, maybe someone would say, well, why am I reading the Albany Times-Union? I could get this in the Schenectady Gazette.
It becomes an ethical issue, and that's one of the people who Ira worked with, Steve Buttry, who's now a journalism professor, used to be a leading editorial figure in the company that owns Ira's paper. Steve Buttry used to say this is an ethical matter. Links are ethics. That is, digitally, you can't just say, as the Times Union reported, you need to then actually link to the actual story, because then people can see the actual reporting behind it, which gives substance to the piece. But it also is only a fair way of handling people who actually expend the money to do the reporting.
The other possibility, of course, is that there's sometimes when you have something that may be slightly dubious, it's better to lay it off on somebody else and say the Times Union is reporting.
Well, that's true.
Well, I told this. I apologize if you've heard me tell this story, but some years ago, I was at a conference with the publisher, among others, the publisher of the newspaper in Yakima, Washington.
Yakima.
Yeah. Great town.
Yes,
isn't that
and he was entirely frustrated by the fact that the local radio station would steal his content every morning.
Never heard of that.
Never heard of that. So he actually arranged one day for the prior day's paper to be delivered to the and sure enough, they read the prior. The other line was and this is typically, excuse me, Alan, but radio, not a station like this, which actually has a news team, but often when radio has only one person in the morning and they're ripping and reading, if they are fairly confident that the story that they're stealing from the newspaper is accurate, they'll just report it.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're not 100% sure, they'll say according to published reports. And if they're really unsure, but they still want to do the story, then they'll specifically say what newspaper they've stolen from.
I used to kid the guys in our local radio station saying you can literally hear the pages being turned.
Yeah,
absolutely. There you go. That's it.
But that's an interesting evolution of newspapers, and I'm delighted to see it. Rex, as you say, it's ethical, and it's the right thing to do. And I think, once again, you don't really lose anything from it.
Absolutely. You know, one of the interesting developments, though, is that because newsroom staffs are smaller than they used to be, we have to link to others. We
have
to depend upon other people to do the reporting. And so you actually have a little calculation in your mind. Now, in our case, because of the role of the Times Union as the Capital Region newspaper, we felt that we had to send a reporter to the scene of the prison break. And so we had a reporter up there throughout, you know, for 10 days or something, thought that we were sending her there for a day. And, of course, she's
I'd be interested to know, I think the listeners would, when you send somebody on site, and we've seen any of the number of network people who are up there, and they're basically all standing on that same corner on Route 374, what kind of reporting can they do independently? In other words, they're not out in the woods, so basically they're all they're doing is getting, I'm guessing, all they're doing is getting reports, briefing from the state police.
That's
or whomever.
Part of the calculation when you send. If you're just going to have somebody who's going to stand up there and say, well, the police kept us away from the action, that's of no value. We happened to have a reporter on our staff whose family is from up there, so she could actually go up, and she knew her way around, she could go talk to people, and you need the kind of reporter who will go knock on the doors of police stations and go in the back door and talk to individual officers and will keep digging, will not just go where you're told to go. When Rudy Giuliani was the mayor of New York City, this is a great lesson, you know, he would have pens for the reporters who were covering big crime scenes, and the reporters actually held away from the action.
Pens, P-E-N-S.
P-E-N-S. Yeah. He would actually
not
fence to write in
with,
the reporters.
Don't Don't fence me in.
Fence them in. And the New York Daily News brought suit and ended some of that practice. They sued him 38 times, I think, during his tenure. Terrible mayor in terms of freedom of the press. And so if you have a reporter who behaves in that way, it doesn't do you any good to send them to the scene. But if you have somebody who won't go with the rest of the reporters, who will go and make the extra effort and kind of knows their way around, that's worth it.
Well, you know, Rex, when you look at it, think about all those reporters in the state capitol who stay around, sitting on the floor there, waiting for the three jokers to come out and the three men in a room to come out and tell them something.
Three jokers is not their official title.
No,
it's my title.
Right. Yes. Well, that's when I stopped being a reporter and became an editor, when I realized I'd just been sitting on... I wish I knew who the quotation came from, but it was, rising as a political reporter means sitting ever longer times on ever harder but more impressive looking marble floors, waiting for ever more important people to come out and lie to you.
I love it.
That was
I would just substitute the word jokers for people.
Yeah, that's good. This is your opportunity, by the way, to offer your point of view. Media at WAMC.org. Media at WAMC.org is how you interact with the Media Project. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here with you, the professor, the publisher, and the editor. We are witness to an interesting phenomenon, and that is the rise of smartphones. Now, this is quite something to note, and its impact is that even online news organizations are now being threatened. You know, we all had, here, I'm subconsciously withdrawing my smartphone from my pocket as we
speak. I got mine too, yeah.
Interesting. 4 in 10 smartphone customers now use Facebook to find, read, watch, share, and comment on the news each week.
What does that mean?
It's interesting. Well, people get their news on social media.
Well, I check my Facebook, but only to see what my family's doing. I would have to write in New York Times or something, but I subscribe to the New York Times. Now, the New York Times is making a deal with Facebook and these other people. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, Facebook is directly delivering the news via Facebook, but most of us, are using Facebook as a delivery vehicle for
content. But the way we, the newspapers and WAMC as well, you're posting content to Facebook
all day long.
That then is linked, if you want to read more about it, to your particular site.
Yeah,
and the deal that was made between Facebook and the New York Times, among others, was content that, as I understand it, is specific to Facebook, does not link to the New York Times, and that there's some sort of a revenue sharing going on there. And it's something that, on the one hand, seems very short-sighted, because the whole notion of the internet and social media for newspapers is to get people to your site and then let them spend some time there and generate advertising, whereas this new deal does not do that. So there's quite a bit of trepidation among those who are taking part in this project.
Another nail in the newspaper coffin.
That's the fear.
But my question to you, Ira, in terms of your interesting description of how all of this work, you said the words revenue sharing. So that means if Facebook sells an ad in the New York Times for the material that they're putting out for the Times, right, that's for them, they have to share with the newspaper the money.
If Facebook generates revenue off of the New York Times story that's specific to Facebook, then the New York Times is supposed to get some sort of cut.
Are you allowed to say that? Is that proper English? You guys...
What's that?
He said off of. If you get it off of. I thought maybe from might have done it.
Off of. This is why I was an editor and not a broadcaster.
Off of. We used to say, I got something off of the bus. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
You remember when Bill Clinton first became president, and in a press conference, he used the phrase, Adam's off ox. He doesn't know me from Adam's off ox. And people said, what? What did he say? Because with his accent, you could hardly tell. Adam's off ox means, you know, the off ox is the one that not next to the guy who's leading the oxen team.
But we digress. Here in the lower 48 don't know about
But the point that Rex is raising is that there's a suggestion that the smartphones in general, the use of and the popularity of smartphones for news is hurting sites such as the traditional media that have gone into digital.
But wait, Ira, I don't get this, Rex. I don't get this. I pay the New York Times so that I can have content. Right?
Okay.
I may pay the Times Union so that I can have content. The moment that stuff starts to show up on Facebook, why would I pay the New York Times?
Therein lies the question.
And
that's why the content that the New York Times and others are posting directly to Facebook, as I understand it, is unique content.
Well, and what they're saying is once this happens, these few news organizations, National Geographic, The Atlantic, The New York Times, NBC News, New York Times is saying we'll put about 30 articles a day directly on through the Facebook feed. That is stuff that isn't linking to the Times, but is rather offered directly by Facebook.
Wait. You guys all tried that in the beginning. I remember it. We'll give you some, but we won't give you all, right?
Some newspapers do that.
You tried it in the beginning, didn't you? We'll give you some, but not all.
No, we're doing some of it now. That's a wholy different matter.
Yeah, it's a different...
We're getting three different things going here at once.
Well, it's important because we have a smart audience, and they're...
Okay, let me try to explain it to you.
Oh, now that's condescending. That's condescending, and you know it.
So in the context of
smart. Well,
you
made reference
audience.
To how smart the audience was.
Let me just try to explain. No. There are these different things. You can put your content out and you link to it via Facebook, and you do as much as you can to improve your numbers, right. You try to maximize your social media presentation by using keywords, we have SEO optimized headlines. We have actually been doing training in our newsroom for how to write headlines for Facebook, which is different from the headlines we put on them in the newspaper. For example, with the search for the prisoners upstate, The best search engine optimized headlines include the actual names of the guys,
right.
And they include the name Dannemora. They include prison. So that's different from what we might put in.
That's a big word with a lot of letters.
Dannemora is big, but it doesn't matter if it's big on digital because it fits. So
that's one.
That's one. The different thing
is,
that links back to your own content.
Right.
That comes back to your homepage.
And you can capture those numbers.
Which in turn builds your numbers, and then you can show your advertisers how many people are looking at
the
website.
So you get the advertising for that. What the Times and the Atlantic and so on are doing is they're giving their content to Facebook in exchange for Facebook giving them some advertising revenue. This is going to be happening now with this as an experiment.
Okay, so let me ask you a question.
That's number two.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Because you're a smart guy, really smart, tall. Wearing a white shirt. So let me ask you a question. Is this a good thing for them to be doing?
Well, I don't know that I could second guess it because they're very smart people making business decisions.
Well, smart people have made bad decisions before, Rex.
I'm just a journalist. I don't know.
You're the editor of a major and prestigious paper. You sit on Pulitzer committees. You lecture classes. You've been a distinguished recipient of several teaching places that pay you to come. So I'm asking you a straight out question. Is this a mistake or not?
I would be quite nervous about it. I don't think it would work for us, for example, because I think there's more benefit to us from drawing our own ad revenue than we would get as a share of being a small news organization from Facebook. And we don't know how quickly, but on the other hand, Facebook could change their algorithms so that our best ideas of how we might get our content to be seen by Facebook users, our best guesses at that might not actually produce the kind of traffic that we're now imagining. So if they change the algorithms, then the only people who are going to be getting their stuff out there are going to be these people who have this contract.
Now, just for a few people who may be out there who aren't familiar with the words algorithm or logarithm, could you explain that?
Nope.
algorithm was when Al Gore and Tipper Gore had that wonderful kiss at the convention some years ago. My opinion on the question you asked, Rex, is that those companies that have entered into this agreement with Facebook are doing so very reluctantly and very carefully based on the immediate need for revenue, and that they're going to watch this very closely, and if their analysis is it ultimately is costing them money or their traffic is going down on their sites, then they will rethink the
agreement. Well, once the genie... Here's my view of it, gentlemen. Once the genie is out of the bottle, it's out. That's the first thing. It's going to be very hard to put that genie back in that bottle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, this seems to me to be no more than just part of the death struggle that print newspapers are facing right now. They're always looking for a way to improve things, and sometimes it just isn't there.
Well, you know, I think it's a very difficult situation that we're in because newspapers have existed with our big newsrooms, you know, with lots of reporters. The reason that these little radio stations use our stuff is because we have more staff.
Absolutely.
We have reporters. They just read stuff. And so to sustain a newsroom, you have to have revenue.
Yep.
What is the mode to do that? And taking some pleasure in the decline of the newspapers is not a good thing.
I hope you don't think that
well,
I was taking
I hope not. Because...
No, not at all. I was just, because why would you be sitting here or Ira?
Well, that's
no, that,
true.
That's true. No, I was just pointing out that that's the way it is. I'm not pointing out that that's what I want. Want to have happen.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
And, you know, you're somewhat sensitive.
Do you think?
You know,
it's hard not to be sensitive when you walk around a newsroom that used to have, you know, 50 or 80 desks all filled with people, and now there's, you know, maybe 20 or 30 desks filled with people.
And in some cases, three desks.
Yeah, simply the smaller papers, yes.
But, now, here's one idea that has come out, an AmeriCorps for reporters.
Sure.
AmeriCorps has like 75,000 placements yearly. Teach for America. I think one of your kids was Teach for America.
Both
of them were teachers. That's wonderful. They do about 10,000 core members serving 2-year stints, and they've both been in business for about 20 years. Here's an idea.
And the government pays for that.
The government pays for it. Here's an idea by a guy named...
In AmeriCorps, they pay for it, not necessarily in Teach for America.
Ah, yeah. This is Steve Waldman, who is a...
Drugstore guy.
No, not Walmart. Waldman. He was was a consultant to the FCC, and he did a very interesting report about 4 years ago on the erosion of local journalism. And now his new report suggests this notion of a Report for America organization, kind of modeled on Teach for America and AmeriCorps. Part of the salary for these reporters would come from the nonprofit new newsrooms, the newspapers that they would be placed at, public radio stations, newspapers, and so on. That is, there would be a new nonprofit paying for part of it, and the rest would be paid matching by the news organization they work for. So basically, you'd get reporters for half price. And that might help preserve reporting jobs.
That's a great idea, except it's not going to happen.
Is that right?
No.
Why is that?
Well, first of all, I know that our journalism classes, I teach one, our journalism classes are filled to capacity. A lot of people want to go into journalism. In order, what you do when you offer this, and so therefore, if we offer an internship here at WAMC or a series of internships, the line forms at the door. In other words, why should we pay for the cow? Get it? But don't you see?
Well, there's all sorts of problems involved with that. And frankly,
you're not going to be pompous. You're not going to go pompous.
No, I mean, there are a number of layers. I mean, for example, I suspect that both at Rex Paper and at my former paper, the unlimited use of interns would be very difficult to get approved or agreed with
through
the unions.
Yeah.
Who are losing jobs left and right, and then you're replacing them with free help.
Plus, it's illegal.
And it is illegal.
Unpaid internships without academic credit is a violation of federal labor law.
That's right. And nobody can have an internship at WMC, I should clarify, who does not have, is not receiving academic credit.
We have the same provision. But even so, this would not be talking about interns. This is talking about people who are supposedly trained. I mean, there's a difference between people who have finished school and who are interns, undergraduates.
The great thing about newspapers, and even in their current state, if they were financially healthier, even better, is that because we have been forced to expand what it is we do to digital, to video, to audio, is that we are now become full-service news organizations, so that it should not be unattractive to young journalists, except the financial underpinnings make it very shaky. It's like, would you want to go to work there if the place is going to lay you off next week? But if you put that aside, newspapers are still very attractive places to work.
Everybody wants it. All our kids want to work on news organizations and newspapers. And, you know, I a long time ago, started maybe 35, 40 years ago, started something called the Legislative Gazette, which is senior practicum. They come, they cover the news in the legislature, and they've been there for a long time, and they go out and they get jobs. Some get jobs, some go directly these days to the dark side to work for legislators as opposed to working on newspapers, but it's good training.
We
it's
have
like
a number of people
school.
On our staff who are Legislative Gazette alums. As a matter of fact, it's great training.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. It's like many people say, they owe everything to Alan.
Yeah,
many people
say why we call it the Media Project.
The Media Project. Yeah. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith coming to you from Albany, New York. If you are listening to us down in Waxahachie or Southern Indiana, wherever you might be. So we have to just talk briefly about Roger Ailes. You know, big news that Rupert Murdoch is passing control of his companies, 21st Century Fox and so on, to his sons, James and Lachlan. Roger Ailes, the CEO of Fox News Channel, says, "My job is to report to Rupert, and I expect that to continue." And 2 days later, he was swatted down, and a release says, nope, he's going to report to the young Murdochs.
Who swatted him?
Actually, it was a release from 21st Century Fox press office.
Yeah, so here's a guy who really, I don't like him, I'm going to be honest with you, but here's a guy who made this franchise into something extraordinary. And he's saying, I'm entitled. It's like the guy who worked for the old man, and then the old man either died or passed on, and then the guy says, I'm so important that I'm going to say that, you know, I still report to the other guy.
Well, the fact is, one of the sons, at least, has had a very tense relationship with Ailes over the years. He said negative things about him. Right. So,
well, Fox News is such a cash cow for that organization. If the Murdochs, father and sons, believe that Roger Ailes is unhappy somehow by this transition, I would presume they're going to try everything they can to smooth it over.
I think there's a time for transition, even for people like Roger Ailes.
I agree
Ailes.
With you. Time to go.
They made $2 billion. That is, they had $2 billion in revenues last year. So that's a big deal.
Well, they're the first in cable news viewership, right? I mean, you know.
In cable, yeah.
And he does that.
Well, now that Brian Williams may be going back to MSNBC, that'll change.
Oh, yeah. Right, I'm sure. So would you guys have kept Brian Williams?
No.
Alan, would you?
No, I couldn't, because I just think it's damaged goods. But I also want to point out that when somebody lies on Fox, no big thing.
But how can, if Brian Williams no longer has the credibility to do the network news, but he has the credibility to do the MSNBC news, what does that say about the MSNBC brand?
Man, it's like O'Reilly on Fox, you know, I think, to Alan's point.
But that's commentary.
Maybe. We'll see what he emerges as. We'll see. Yeah. And it could be that it's like sending a great pitcher down to AAA. You know, maybe he'll come back.
Well, there is that thought. If Lester Holt does not do well long term, that might bring him back.
I'm fascinated by that.
That's all the time we have for today.
Oh, no, Rex. This ought to be an hour.
help me, Rhonda. Okay, that's the publisher, the professor, and the editor. We thank you all for joining us on The Media Project.
Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful.